You're listening to the State of Our Football Nation on FNR.
Josh Parrish, George Denikian, and another special guest on State of Our Football Nation. And the best way to welcome him is to say the voice of the game down under, Simon Hill. How are you, mate?
I'm very good, George. Thank you for that kind introduction.
No. It's for us. It's been a joy listening to you and watching you at Fox, especially in the early years when Fox was doing such a tremendous job setting up a whole new platform and giving people an opportunity. And they were also pushing a whole new subscription model television set up that many Australians really haven't grasped or come to the idea that, yeah, we should be paying for our footy. Because they've been spoiled for great many years. But that platform has now eased out, and there are other streaming platforms like Optus and Stan now doing some great coverage of the game. But we were waiting for another new deal to be done in the game. And lo and behold, we heard about Paramount Plus, a new streaming platform. And then we discovered, actually it was Viacom and CBS, which of course own 10 in Australia, and we knew something exciting was about to take shape. When did you get an inkling that there was a whole new model to sell the game and to promote the game and to showcase the game in Australia?
It's a good question, George. And to be honest, the answer is it was quite late on in the piece. If you'll remember the newspaper speculation at the time, because we all knew that the A-League rights, you know, were up for grabs again at the end of the last season, and the W-League, of course, and the international rights come to that. But the name that was being talked about predominantly was Stan and Channel 9. Fox, of course, were still in the running as well. And there was, you know, a bit of talk of various other platforms such as DAZN. I think even Amazon was mentioned at one point.
Yes, it was.
And there might have been one or two others as well that I've forgotten. But to be honest, the Channel 10 Paramount Plus thing was a bit of a surprise. I don't know how late they came into the conversation, but when they did, obviously it was like, oh, this is interesting. Well, all of a sudden, there's something a bit different in the market. When they got the rights, obviously for broadcasters like me and many others, you're thinking, well, okay, I hope they're going to be interested in me. And thankfully for me, you know, they were. It took a bit of time to get over the line, as these things do. I signed a few weeks ago now.
And you were almost out the door. You were almost heading back to Manchester City.
Well, I would have probably headed back to London, to be brutally honest, not Manchester per se. But, yeah. It was, I don't know how close I came to actually leaving Australia, but it was around November last year. So this was long before, you know, 10 were a part of the conversation, and even Stan and Channel 9. At that point, you know, we hadn't even started the last season of the A-League on Fox. And obviously I was out of work. I was lucky enough to pick up a fair bit of freelancing work. But at that particular point, it was difficult. And... Yeah. You know, I was looking into the distance thinking, you know, maybe I don't get a gig next year, even if I stay. And am I going to be able to survive? Do I want to stay here? And the answer really was, as much as I love Australia, and you'll get this being football people yourself, I'm a football man. I came here, as much as I like Australia, you know, I came here to work in football. And if I'm not working in football, then really my reason for being here doesn't exist. So I got to the point in late November last year where I'd sort of made a decision, and I was literally 2 weeks away from heading home. I have an apartment in London, and I gave my tenant notice and said, sorry, I'm coming back. and I got my travel exemption, which came through very quickly. Maybe they'd be glad to see the back of me. I don't know.
They might be vying for a job in broadcasting. And they thought, maybe. Get this guy out first.
Maybe.
And we got room.
Yeah.
Look, it's exciting times.
So I was close. But just to finish that off, the only reason that I didn't is that the COVID spike happened in the UK. All of a sudden, the cases went gangbusters. At that point, of course, I wasn't vaccinated. Virtually nobody was in Australia. Mm-hmm. And being over 50, I was thinking, do I want to go back to that? It's a risky business. You know, you don't want to play with your health. So no. I thought I'd tough it out for a few more months. And, of course, you know the rest.
Blessings. Let me tell you, from our perspective, it's seriously exciting because this CBS Viacom 10 play has come together in a fantastic time, because suddenly we've seen the API or the APL, the Australian Professional Leagues, we've seen FA, Football Australia, and we've seen now the FFA Cup given a level of cred that it hasn't had before. We've always been lovers of the game and lovers of a national knockout, but 10 came along and said, we're going to give it, you know, a standalone platform, and we're going to make it a weekend opportunity to showcase it to as many Australians as possible. And then, of course, we heard that it was not only going to be free to air, which everyone's been clamoring about, but there'd be streaming opportunities as well. And they were going to use all the technology they had to make it young, to showcase the next generation of footballing fans and give them an opportunity to not only fall in love with the game, but see it presented in a fashion that hadn't been done before. Doing basically, 10 was hoping to do, or is hoping to do, to the game what they've done with the big bash cricket. And if they can do that, then we know, you know, Josh knows, and I have enormous respect and pride in watching Josh and that young cadre of broadcasters that we've seen develop over the last 4 years at FNR. The more opportunities that avail themselves and give them a chance, as it's giving you a chance, one, to headline this new coverage, I think it's a five-year deal. That's a big commitment. And it showcases a tremendous new era. And we've all got to back it. We've all got to support it. And I'm excited for you, and I'm excited for all the young men and women because, hey, did I mention there's a Women's World Cup coming down under and not that long away. And with every passing week in lockdown, it seems to me, can we get out of this lockdown so we can welcome the world to Australia and New Zealand? It's going to be a seriously exciting development.
Look, it's very exciting, and obviously we're just at the start of that journey with 10 and Paramount Plus. It's very much going to be a partnership both with the APL, which means the A-League and the W-League, and also with Football Australia for the national teams, the Socceroos, the Matildas.
And the youth.
And the youth as well. Yeah, and you know, the one thing you missed out there is the other thing that we're already seeing on 10 play over the last few nights is the Asian Champions League, and not just the games involving the Australian clubs, but we're seeing all those round of 16 ties being broadcast live and free as well on 10 play. We've got the Matildas coming up next week. They're playing a friendly against Ireland. It's not a particularly nice time. It's 3:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, but, you know, there's nothing we can do about that.
But if it's on 10, you can record it and watch it when you want.
That's
which
right.
Which wasn't available before.
And we've got a preview show on Sunday at 4 o'clock as well, looking ahead to that game. Uh-huh. So we're just at the start of this journey now. And obviously, you know, plans are still being put into place. The APL is talking about having a football hub. You talked about those young broadcasters. I was listening to the first FFA Cup game that went out on 10 during the week. Young Campbell Johnson up there in Queensland, who's a great young kid and knows the game, loves the game, working with Nick Meredith, the old hand, the old dog up there in Queensland.
Keep him on a leash.
there's going to be lots of opportunities. And the great thing about this, certainly from my limited experience with being at 10 so far, I've only been there a few weeks, so as I say, it is early days, but they are mad keen to make this work, and they've got experience in taking a product, which they did with the Big Bash, and turning it into something very, very special that connects with people via their big platform that they have over free-to-air and now with Paramount Plus as well. The great thing about streaming that we didn't have a few years ago, and for this, I suppose, you know, we should give a whole lot of credit to Optus as well in many ways, because, you know, I remember a few years ago when the Premier League went over to Optus and everybody went, oh, that ain't going to work. and, you know, they had a few teething problems with the World Cup as well, but it's proven that streaming is here and the technology has caught up. And now everybody goes, yeah, yeah, no, it's all good. So, you know, they've sort of paved the way. And this presents us as a sport now with a very exciting opportunity to finally realize the potential of our game. And I'm not excluding, by the way, the NPL clubs, because I'm one of those, probably like you and Josh. I want this second division up as well, up and running. Well, yeah. And showcase the lower tiers, really connect the pyramid. And I know that James Johnson and his team at FA are working on that. It's, you know, might not happen in a few months, but it's going to happen. And if we can get all the different moving parts of this game together, this has been the conundrum of our sport since before you and I had grey hair, George, is to get all the parts of the cake in perfect alignment. If we can do that, then goodness me, we have so much blue sky ahead of us. But we've been saying that for a long time. We've got to make it work.
I noticed you mentioned it, blue sky. Did you get almost heart palpitations when you heard that Cristiano Ronaldo was going to Manchester City?
Yeah.
You're a City man. What were you thinking when you heard the first no?
To be honest, the first thing I thought was, that's going to be funny. Imagine how angry that's going to make United fans to see him coming out in a Manchester derby wearing sky blue. To be honest, I don't know how serious City's interest was, because if you've read the subsequent reports, they refused to offer a transfer fee for him. So whether it was used as a bit of a red herring or not, I don't know. City clearly needed a striker. And to be honest, on a pure football level, take the emotion out of it, I think Cristiano Ronaldo would have been okay for us for a year, because I think long-term City want Harry Kane, or they want Erling Haaland or Vlahovic or somebody else as their main striker, because Aguero's gone. But it would have been funny.
But he is a great poacher. Josh and I have discussed this, and we don't have to enter that realm of discussion about the best player in the world or the best ever, whatever. Forget the GOAT. He is a remarkable poacher. He's made himself an extraordinary poacher. We saw him at the ICC here playing for Real and against Man City, and there were 98,000, 99,000 people for what was ostensibly a midweek friendly at the other end of the world.
Yeah.
So and it was...
He's incredible.
And Bale was there, and he was fit and healthy and all that, and they looked magnificent.
Look, go on, George.
And everyone behind the scenes, and I was in corporate there looking after the heavy hitters, most of them from the AFL, and their children wanted one thing. Yeah. Can you guess what that one thing was?
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo's shirt or a selfie or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You know,
James Hurd's children wanted a photo or an opportunity to say hello.
The remarkable thing about Cristiano Ronaldo is he's 36, so let's be brutally honest. He's entering the twilight years of his career.
But he's not your average 36.
But he's in remarkable physical condition. And it's mentally that he's still got that hunger. Now, Cristiano Ronaldo could have gone off to Qatar. He could have gone anywhere. He could have gone to America and said, look, you know, I'm going to go and have a nice couple of years without any disrespect to those competitions, but, you know, take some money and have a slightly easier competition to play against. Instead, he's gone to the league that has the most scrutiny and for arguably the biggest club in it. And he's going back to a place where he was, you know, brilliantly successful before. And the old saying is, you should never go back. So, and what's he done? First two games, he scored 3 goals. That's the mark of one of the world's greats, not just of this era, but of any era. And, you know, for his sake, I hope he succeeds. Obviously, as a Man City fan, I hope he falls flat on his face.
Simon, talking of that kind of deity worship that we've seen on his return to Manchester United, coming back to the local game, I mean, obviously we're never going to attract someone of that stature down here, but do you still believe
Del Piero?
Well, we did.
And he put his reputation on the line, did he not?
Yes.
Yes, but Ronaldo is a different level, obviously. Yes. But yes. Obviously, that's difficult, and there's been a lot of sort of spending cutbacks in the league with COVID enforced, salary cap reductions and so forth. But do you still believe in the power of the marquee player to draw attendances and make the game mainstream here? Or is there something else we really need to tap into to convert that sort of, interest that George is talking about with, 99,000 people here for a friendly to an A-League fixture?
I think it's multi-layered. I think it can help. It's a bit of a sugar hit. As we saw with Del Piero, for the first season, he packed out stadiums wherever he went. Mm. By the second season, the novelty had sort of worn off a little bit. So it can be a short-term fix, but they can help. And they also help, don't forget to develop young players here as well. Imagine if you were a young kid at Sydney FC, as, several of them were. I think it was Blake Powell who was on the score sheet the same day when Del Piero got his first goal against Newcastle Jets. I might be wrong, but, imagine Blake Powell walking out and texting his mates going, "I'm playing with Del Piero today." it's unbelievable. So they can certainly help teach. And I think a good example of this was Ola Toivonen. Even though he was, it's not the same register as Del Piero in terms of his fame, but he was a proper marquee. He was damn good player. And you could see that he lifted the players around him, and he wasn't playing in the best victory side either, to be fair. So I think they still have value. But is it the only thing? No, it's not the panacea. Still, for me, and you mentioned that 99,000 crowd at the MCG, we've got those fans. They're there. Some of them are more connected to the game than others, but they know about it. Now, what we've got to do is to get people stop caring about the person who wears the jersey and the name on the back, and concentrate more on the badge on the front. We've got to get them connected with that tribalism for the love of their club, which, I grew up with almost as my DNA, because I had it handed down to me by my dad and granddad and great granddad who played for them in 1890, whatever it was. So it's that love of the club. I had heroes too. Colin Bell was my hero in the 70s. But when he retired, or had he been transferred — he wasn't, he got injured and retired — but had he been transferred, I wouldn't have transferred my allegiances. No. I was still a Man City fan. That was Francis my Lee. Club. Francis Lee, Mike Lee. Summerby. And when City got relegated to the third tier of English football, I still went every week. And people here bang on about, it's the quality. You'll never get the fans because the quality's not good enough. Doesn't matter. Mm. If you've got that connection to your club — when I watched City in the third division, they were absolute garbage. They were terrible. Didn't matter. I still went every week because it was my club. And that's the tribalism that we need to engender. We've got it to a certain extent. The A-League's done a decent job overall. And, we look at the last couple of years and go, the crowds aren't great, blah, blah, blah. But when you look at from where we started and maybe 20, 30 years ago, it's actually doing okay. It's just not gone on to where it should have.
Do you know what really excites me? And Josh and I have discussed this too, the quality of the youngsters that are coming through. And Marco Tilio, one of many. There's a young kid called Lofthouse.
Jez Lofthouse. Yes, very good.
What a beautifully balanced young man and can play football.
Surprised he's not in the A-League. He has had trials, I know that.
Yeah, just recently.
And the Mariners, I think.
And there are others coming through, and there's a factory in Adelaide that's churning them out.
Absolutely.
It's called Adelaide City. The Adelaide Reds. It's just fantastic stuff. And WA, we haven't discussed it because the king over there, Mark McGowan, has closed the door and won't let anybody move, either in or out. But look, there are some tremendous – we had Jamie Harnwell on a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling us they're working hard over there to play the game because they can, and they've got some important FFA Cup games. Well, and how exciting is that going to be?
Brilliant. And, just on that, we're seeing at the moment – the opportunities that were given to, and I'll pick one name out, to Alou Kool last year, who played for the Mariners. Now, he's gone to Stuttgart. He scored 4 goals in his first handful of games. He's playing in the Stuttgart 2. But, he's now getting his opportunity. The Mariners got a fee. Everybody wins. That's the football ecosystem. So that development of talent, particularly out of the African diaspora, and you mentioned Adelaide, there's a big South Sudanese community there. Same, I think, to a lesser extent in Melbourne. Awa Mabil came out of there. Ruan Tongik, Bruce Kamau, Alou Kool. You know, there's a whole production line. The Touré brothers at Adelaide, Cassini Yenge, Tete Yenge up at Newcastle. You know, all these young kids are getting opportunities, which is fantastic. Now, if we can balance that out with good experienced pros and a sprinkling of, you know, magic dust via the marquees, which is difficult, but if we can do that, then we've got the perfect recipe, you know, for a good league, to both to develop players and to entertain the fans here, because we can't forget the fans here. I know everybody, a lot of coaches and a lot of pundits, oh, it's a development league. All our eggs should be in developing players. That's part of it. But we've still got to attract fans through the gate and make sure this is a serious competition here. It's about finding that balance, I think.
And that second division will give us that, that union, that bringing of the two broken bodies and bring them together and make it whole. Look, it's been fantastic. We're thrilled a bit that you're back and you're on air. What's the next big game?
I'm calling the Matildas next Wednesday morning, 3:30 a.m., along with Amy Chapman. So looking forward to it. I haven't called the Matildas in a while, so should be fun.
And what are you making of some of the outstanding young talent that's the next tier, just pushing the Sam Kerrs and others for, hey, don't forget me, I'm here because I want to play in a World Cup in less than 2 years' time.
I tell you that the girls that I'm looking forward to seeing next Wednesday, look, we know all about Sam and Caitlin Ford. No disrespect.
Emily, Emma Checkers.
Yeah, Emily Van Egmond, Ellie Carpenter. You know, they're the established stars now. The ones that I'm looking forward to seeing are particularly Winnie Heatley, I think has been called up for the first time. Now, I've watched her play for Brisbane. I think she's very good. And Australia, the Matildas have a problem in the heart of the defence. They're probably a couple of central defenders short of being a real challenger for silverware. Now, Winnie Heatley, I don't know if she's, you know, the woman to be able to fill that role, but I think she's got an opportunity. I think Claire Wheeler's been called up as well. So that this could be an experimental lineup in terms of the defence for Tony Gustafsson to have a look at some of those girls and say, you know, maybe she's the girl that can push through in the same way that Sam Kerr did 10, 15 years ago. She's been around for that long and all the rest of them. So there's a big opportunity for those younger defenders in particular. So that's what I'm looking for.
Josh?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's also... kind of talents who've slipped off the radar for the Matildas recently, who, you know, if they get back to regular club football, could be making a grand return. I mean, we all saw Alex Chidiak a few years ago burst onto the scene. She hasn't been involved. She's been left out of squads and so forth. But now she's actually training and in pre-season EN in Japan. So there are, I think, a few players who've had overseas moves not quite pan out for them. I guess Jenna McCormack would be one of those who came back to NPLW to play a few games and just get some minutes in her leg. So there's the competition for places in the squad is incredibly intense at the moment.
It is. And, you know, you look at the Olympics and Mary Fowler's sort of emergence, and we always knew that she was a very talented youngster. Is she now at the point where she demands a regular starting spot? To be honest, I think selection in the squad is almost a given at the moment, but can she force her way into that first 11 on a regular basis? So
who's our best keeper?
That's a good question. I mean, up until the Olympics, I would have said, no, it's Lydia. But now I think Tegan Micah had such a good game, good games. I think it might be her. But I don't want to say that because I really like Lydia and I think she's a great goalkeeper.
We love Lydia, but I'm just saying when they're knocking on the door, it's
good. Competition for places. It's what you want.
You want them red hot.
Yeah.
Simon, it's been a delight, my friend. Welcome back to the game.
Thank you.
And we look forward to catching up. It's the Matildas up against the Irish.
Yeah, that's right, in Dublin.
In Dublin. Well done. Okay. You got your pronunciation directory ready?
Well, let me tell you, Ireland will not be as difficult as Vietnam were last week. Goodness me, that was a tough one. Thankfully, my local laundrette has a Vietnamese guy who runs it, and he literally sat down and ran me through every single name.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Will you stop giving away all those trade secrets?
Well, I've got to find out how to say them from somewhere, haven't I?
Correct.
Listen, Simon, my mom's English is a second language teacher, manager. And trust me, the Vietnamese don't think much of pronouncing English names either. So the feeling is mutual.
Yeah, I know. But to be honest, and you're not going to get all of them right. You're not going to get all of them right. But if you make an effort, I think that shows that you're showing respect to the opposition. Yeah. And let's be honest, somebody pronounces one of our guys' names wrong from overseas, we're quick to jump on it.
Exactly. Absolutely. Thank you for joining us, Simon Pleasure. Hill. Just a terrific opportunity to hear from the voice of the game down under. And we wish him great calling throughout the season. And he's got a hot one, an international between the Matildas and the Irish coming up. Is it next week?
It's next Wednesday morning, 3:30 a.m. Eastern.
Yep. Prime time.
Thanks, guys. Simon. Have a good week.
Listening. Catch you next week, Josh.
Football Nation. See you, George.
On FNR.
Oh, yeah, that's great.